नमो भगवते वासुदेवाया ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाया ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So today we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the first canto, Creation, Chapter 4, The Appearance of Sri Narada. We're on text number 6. Katam Alakshitaha Porai Katam alakshitaha porai Samprapta Kuru Jangalan Samprapta Kuru Jangalan Unmata Muka Jadavad Unmata Muka Jadavad Vicharan Gaja Sahavaye Vicharan Gaja Sahavaye Katama Lakshita Porai Samprapta Kuru Jangalan Unmata Mukha Jadavad Vicharanja Gaja Savade Katama Lakshita Porai Samprapta Kuru Jangalan Unmata Mukha Jadavad Vicharan Gaja Savade Chitapurai Vaishnavis. Thank you. Katam. How? Alakshitaha. Recognized. Purai. By the citizens. Samprapta. Reaching. Kurujangalan. The Kurujangala provinces. Unmata. Mad. Mukha. Dumb. Jadavat. Stunted. Vicharan. Wandering. Gajasavaye. Hastinapur. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. How is he, Srila Sukadev, the son of Vyas, recognized by the citizens when he entered the city of Hastinapur, now Delhi? After wandering in the provinces of Kuru and Jangala, appearing like a madman, dumb and retarded. Please repeat. How is he, Srila Sukadev, the son of Vyas, recognized by the citizens when he entered the city of Hastinapur, now Delhi, after wandering in the provinces of Kuru and Jangala, appearing like a madman, dumb and retarded. Purport. The present city of Delhi was formerly known as Hastinapur because it was first established by King Hasti. Goswami Sukadev, after leaving his paternal home, was roaming like a madman, and therefore it was very difficult for the citizens to recognize him in his exalted position. A sage is not, therefore, recognized by sight, but by hearing. One should approach a sadhu, or a great sage, not to see, but to hear him. If one is not prepared to hear the words of a sadhu, there is no profit. Sukadeva Goswami was a sadhu who could speak on the transcendental activities of the Lord. He did not satisfy the whims of ordinary citizens. He was recognized when he spoke on the subject of Bhagavatam, and he never attempted jugglery like a magician. Outwardly, he appeared to be retarded, dumb madman, but in fact, he was the most elevated transcendental personality. Om Agyana Tamarandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshus Unmanitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovistam Sapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Upakadamayam Dadati Swabhadantika Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Vanchakopa Tubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyeva Cha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. How is he, Srila Sukadev, the son of Vyas, recognized by the citizens when he entered the city of Hastinapur, now Delhi, after wandering in the provinces of Kuru and Jangala, appearing like a madman, dumb and retarded? So this is describing Srila Sukadev Goswami. Here it describes that he was wandering, roaming around like a madman in this area formerly known as Hastinapur. So I was looking up in the Indian map, this Hastinapur area. And if you look at Delhi to Kurukshetra, which it mentions here, this Kurujangala, which refers to Kurukshetra, it's a region of the Kuru forests. It's a district of Taneshwar and Kurukshetra. So if you go from Delhi to Kurukshetra, it's about 96 miles. By car, it'd take you about 3 hours. And this is where Sukadeva Goswami was wandering around like a madman, this whole area there. And so nobody could recognize him. So this is very nice. And it's described that this Hastinapur was the capital of the kingdom of Bharat, And 5,000 years ago, according to the Vedic literature, it was the capital of the world. So this Hastinapur was on the bank of the Jamuna River. And if you see there, there's the map of Delhi. They show Delhi and then they show Old Delhi. That's probably where the actual Hastinapur was. I'm not sure. But anyway, this Hasti, it means elephant. So this city was so opulent that they had so many elephants everywhere, horses. And they were actually decorated too with jewels and gems. And there were so many noblemen riding these elaborate chariots. And they were passing these marble palaces. And they were inlaid with glittering jewels. It was such a nice place. You could hear the smell, the sweet incense coming from the windows. And there were so many fruits and flowers everywhere. The streets are very wide. It was scented with the scented water. So there was no hint of poverty or distress there. It was like the crown jewel of Vedic culture. It was so nice. And this is interesting because there were many states. There were not many states actually during that time. And the world was under just one culture, the Vedic culture. So, Prabhupada writes here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, eighth chapter. He says, so people, the advanced people, they were Aryans. Arya means advanced. So the Indo-European stock, they were also Aryans. They came from Central India, Central Asia, and some of them went to the Indian side. That is the history. So you can see the Vedic culture spread all over the world. So Prabhupada, it also mentions here that, so we discussed here how it went through Hastinapur, and then he wasn't recognized. It was very difficult for the citizens to recognize his exalted position. And here, like they say, you can't judge a book by its cover, right? So in the same way, there's a story of how Srila Vyasadeva's disciples, they actually met Sukadeva Goswami one time. So Vyasadeva would teach his disciples the verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he said, you should always chant these verses because they'll protect you. So they were in the forest doing errands or whatever. And they saw this like a madman. They thought he was a demon. And they got scared and they started running away chanting these slokas from the Bhagavatam. You know, and then Sukadeva heard him. He heard these verses and Sukadeva was so attracted. He started running after them. And they were like, ah, screaming and running back. And then finally he came to the ashram and that's where he actually decided to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is the speaker of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is very interesting. Even in our modern day, there's many great sadhus. Like in the time of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, there was this Vamsidas. Everybody thought he was like a madman. But actually, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur recognized him. He said, no, he's a very elevated soul. So see, it takes one to know one, right? So we have to seek out these transcendental personalities. So it also mentioned here in the purport that he spoke on transcendental subject matters. You know, Chanakapanda says that a fool goes unrecognized until he speaks. So even though Sukadeva may have looked retarded and dumb, as soon as he spoke, as soon as he was recognized by the sages, everybody recognized him and asked him to speak. Just like there's this, you ever heard of this catbird? Anybody heard of a catbird? It's like an ugly gray bird. You think it's just common bird. But if you ever hear it sing, it really sings really nice. So you see, you can't judge things by its covers or looks. But these sadhus, they're not professional speakers. They don't just speak on what people like to hear. They're not trying to, like, you know, make everything sound nice and everything perfect. They're actually, they want to tell the truth as it is. They're actually going to disrupt your material life. They're actually going to cure your diseases by their transcendental vibrations, how they speak. They're going to cut that heart, that hrida granti. They're going to cut it. And that's their mission. They want to speak on the behalf of Krishna. That's their whole purpose. So it's very nicely described. There's in the fifth canto, chapter 11, the whole story of Jatabharata, which is a very interesting story. It kind of relates to this one. You see all throughout the Bhagavatam, there's so many transcendental personalities. You never, by looking at them, think that they were great sages. And we can see here the time of Jatabharata also. But here, just in regard to speaking, this is when the Jatabharata actually told the king, after he was being criticized by the king, he thought he was a dullard, it's stupid fellow, what are you doing? I can't even carry the palanquin properly. What's wrong with you? Is it too heavy for you? You know, started to criticize him. So this is what he says, Jatabharata said. My dear king, although you are not at all experienced, you are trying to speak like a very experienced man. Consequently, you cannot be considered an experienced person. An experienced person does not speak the way you are speaking about the relationship between a master and a servant, or about material pains and pleasures. These are simply external activities. Any advanced experienced man, considering the absolute truth, does not talk in this way. So here we're learning what it means to speak properly. So this is a very short one paragraph purport for this verse, and I'll read that. It's very nice. So Prabhupada says, Krishna similarly chastised Arjuna. Asochan an vasochas tvam pragna vadams cha basase. While speaking learned words, you're lamenting for what is not worthy of grief. That's from 2.11. Similarly, among people in general, 99.9% try to talk like experienced advisors. But they are actually devoid of spiritual knowledge and are therefore like inexperienced children speaking nonsensically. Consequently, their words cannot be given any importance. One has to learn from Krishna or his devotee. If one speaks on the basis of this experience, that is, on the basis of spiritual knowledge, one's words are valuable. At the present moment, the entire world is full of foolish persons. Bhagavad Gita describes these people as mudhas. They're trying to rule human society, but because they are devoid of spiritual knowledge, the entire world is in a chaotic condition. To be released from these miserable conditions, one has to become Krishna conscious and take lessons from an exalted personality like Jatabharata, Lord Krishna, and Kapila Dev. That is the only way to solve the problems of material life. So we're also hearing from Sukadev. It's very important. So there's another part of this in the 10th chapter of the 5th canto, in the discussions between Jatabharata and Maharaj Rahugana. He's explaining, he's asking him now. He goes, sir, you know, he goes, wow, you're such a great, this spiritual knowledge you have must be hidden. He said, you have spoken words approved by the yogic process, but it's not possible for us to understand what you've said. Therefore, kindly explain it. So Prabhupada again gives a one paragraph genius purport here. And I'll read that. Saintly people like Jatabharata do not speak ordinary words. Whatever they say is approved by great yogis and those advanced in spiritual life. That is the difference between ordinary people and saintly people. The listener must also be advanced to understand the words of each of such exalted, spiritually advanced people as Jatabharata. Bhagavad Gita was spoken to Arjuna, not to others. Lord Krishna especially selected Arjuna for instruction in spiritual knowledge because Arjuna happened to be a great devotee and confidential friend. Similarly, great personalities also speak to the advanced, not to the sudras, vaishyas, women, or unintelligent men. Sometimes it is very risky to give great philosophical instructions to ordinary people. Don't get discouraged. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for the benefit of the fallen souls of Kali Yuga, has given us a very nice instrument. What is that? The chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. The general mass of people, although sudras and less, can be purified by chanting this Hare Krishna mantra. Then they can understand the exalted philosophical statements of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Our Krishna consciousness movement has therefore adopted the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra for the general masses. When people gradually become purified, they are instructed in the lessons of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. materialistic people like Shri or Stri, Sudra, and Dvija Bandhu cannot understand words of the spiritual advancement. Yet, one can take shelter of a Vaishnava, for he knows the art of enlightening even a Sudra in the highly elevated subject matter spoken in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's so nice. So it also mentions in the purport here that these saintly people, they don't satisfy the whims of ordinary citizens. And Sukadeva Goswami, he wasn't a lackey. You know, he wasn't trying to satisfy people or please people or be their servants or whatever. He was actually, he thought that these worldly men are worse than drinking poison. So he that's why he didn't associate with them. So this is from the second canto, second chapter. And Sukadeva Goswami here speaking what he thinks about these ordinary and the whims of ordinary people. And this is what he considers to be whims. When there is enough ground to lie on, he said, what is the use of cots and beds? When one can use his own arms, what is the need for a pillow? These are all whims, by the way. No. When one can use the palms of his hands, what need is there for all kinds of utensils? Are there no torn clothes lying on the common road? Do the trees no longer give their fruit? Are the rivers dried up? Do they no longer supply water to the thirsty? Are the mountain caves now closed? Or above all, does the Almighty Lord no longer protect the fully surrendered souls who spread His glories? Why then should anyone flatter those who are intoxicated by hard-earned wealth? As the ultimate goal of life, one should simply worship the Supreme Lord. He's not finished yet. Both by rising and setting, Srila Sukadeva says, the sun brings death nearer for everyone, except him who uses his valuable time to discuss the pastimes of the Lord. Do the trees not live a long life? What good is it? Do the bellows of the blacksmith not breathe? All around us, do the beasts not eat and discharge semen? Are we any different if we will not hear the glories of the Lord? One who has not heard and chanted such messages has ears like snake holes and a tongue like that of a frog. By croaking, the frog simply calls the serpents to swallow him up. And by talking of worldly things, men are simply calling death. Let them sing the eternal songs of the Lord and make themselves eternal. Okay, one more paragraph. Your head may be covered with a silken turban or golden crown, he warned, but if you won't bow your head to the Lord, then your turban or crown is just as a useless weight. Your hands may be decorated with glittering bangles, but if you won't use your hands to clean the temple of the Lord, then they're no better than the hands of a corpse. The eyes that will not look at the beautiful form of Krishna are like the eyes on the plumes of peacocks. And the legs that do not move to the holy places where Krishna is remembered are no better than tree trunks. The person who has never served a pure devotee of Krishna is certainly a dead body, though he may be breathing. Wow. This is pretty advanced here, huh? So it also mentions that he did not do any jugglery, like magic. So this is very interesting. Actually, Sukadeva Goswami says, as far as he was concerned, the whole world was a mere jugglery of names. It made no more sense than the babble of sea waves, and it is full of phantom forms that are doomed to disappear. And those are all the things we just discussed. This is all jugglery of names. And actually, in the second canto, fourth chapter, describes how this jugglery refers to karmakanda, jnanakanda, and yoga. This is all jugglery. Prabhupada even says, a handful of real paddy is more valuable than heaps of paddy skins without any substance within. Similarly, one should not be attracted by the jugglery of karmakanda or jnanakanda or even the gymnastic performances of yoga, but skillfully should take the simple performances of kirtan, smaranam, etc., under a bona fide spiritual master, and without any difficulty attain the perfection of life. So did you know this jugglery is a type of irreligion? It's actually one of the five types of irreligion. It's described in the seventh canto, chapter 15, on instructions for civilized human beings. He describes there how there's five branches of irreligion. One is known as irreligion, vidharma, religious principles for which one is unfit, paradharma, pretentious religion, abhasa, analytical religion, upadharma, and cheating religion, chaladharma. One who is aware of real religious life must abandon these five as irreligious. Guess which one is the jugglery of these five? Which one? You're right. Cheating religion. Yeah, that's true. So he goes on to describe these. And of course, Prabhupada mentions in the purports to these that we know what the real religion is to surrender to Krishna. Sarvadharma. Pratitya. Okay, so then he goes on to describe a little further. He says in one of the purports here, he describes these different religious principles. But then he says, and interpretation by one's juggling of words is called chaladharma. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, I'll just read a few sentences. Elsewhere it is said, savai pumsam paro dharmo yatau bhaktir adhoksaje. The real religious system is that which leads one to become a devotee of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, anything opposed to this religious system of progressive Krishna consciousness is called Vidharma, Paradharma, Upadharma, or Chaladharma. Misinterpretation of Bhagavad Gita is called Chaladharma. When Krishna directly says something and some rascal interprets it to mean something different, this is called Chaladharma, a religious system of cheating, or Shabda Bit, a jugglery of words. To see. So one should be very extremely careful to avoid these various types of cheating religious systems. So here it's described how he was appeared to be Jadavat, like a dumb. So this actually is interesting because we know the story of Jada Bharat. Was similar, he appeared to be a Jadavat. And there it's described to be like a dunce. And this is what the king, Rahugana, was describing this great personality, Jadabrat. So this is what he says in the fifth canto, tenth chapter. My dear king, this is what Jadabrat was responding to the king, sorry. My dear king, you have said, you rascal, you dull, crazy fellow, I'm going to chastise you, and then you will come to your senses. In this regard, let me say that although I live like a dull, deaf, and dumb man, I'm actually a self-realized person. What will you gain by punishing me? If your calculation is true that I am a madman, then your punishment will be like beating a dead horse. There will be no effect. When a madman is punished, he's not cured of his madness. And then Prabhupada writes a nice purport, this one little short paragraph. Everyone in this material world is working like a madman under certain impressions falsely acquired in the material condition. For example, a thief who knows that stealing is not good and who knows that it is followed by punishment by a king or by God, who has seen that thieves are arrested and punished by the police, nonetheless steals again and again. He is obsessed with the idea that by stealing he will be happy. This is a sign of madness. Despite repeated punishments, the thief cannot give up his stealing habit. Therefore, the punishment is useless. So just see. And then also this word comes up again in the seventh canto in regard to Prahlad Maharaj. This is in the fourth chapter. And Prahlad Maharaj was also being described as dull. And here the verse goes, from the very beginning of his childhood, Prahlad Maharaj was uninterested in childish playthings. Indeed, he gave them up altogether and remained silent and dull, being fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness. See, they appear dull, but he's completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Since the mind was always affected by Krishna consciousness, he could not understand how the world goes on, being fully absorbed in the activities of sense gratification. So Prabhupada, again, in this purport, describes here very nicely the exalted position of Srila Prahlada Maharaj. An exalted devotee or Mahatma who is rarely to be seen remains fully conscious of Krishna and constantly sees the Lord within the core of his heart. It is sometimes said that one is influenced by evil stars like Saturn, Rahu, or Ketu, he cannot make advancement in any positive or prospective activity. In just the opposite way, Prahlad was influenced by Krishna, the supreme planet, and thus he could not think of the material world and live without Krishna consciousness. That is the sign of a Maha Bhagavata. Even if one is an enemy of Krishna, a Mahabhagavata sees him to be so engaged in Krishna's service. Another crude example is that everything appears yellow to the jaundiced eye. Similarly, to a Mahabhagavat, everyone but himself appears to be engaged in Krishna's service. So this is Prahlada Maharaj. He didn't have any attraction to anything material. This was his symptoms, that he was just simply attached to Krishna. And even though he was a boy, he didn't even play with toys or do mundane activities. So he appeared to be like dumb or just silent like that. So he says, Prabhupada says here, for a small boy to give up playing is impossible. But Prahlada Maharaj, being situated in first-class devotional service, was always absorbed in a trance of Krishna consciousness, just as a materialistic person is always absorbed in thoughts of material gain. A Mahabhagavata, like Prahlada Maharaj, is always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. So now it is described here that he was a transcendental personality. Even though he appeared in so many different ways, he was a transcendental personality. And in the Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter, Arjuna is asking, what is the symptom of this transcendental personality? You know, how does he speak? What is his language? How does he walk? How does he sit? So he asks these four questions, and Krishna answers them, all four of them. But I'm just going to answer two that relate to our class today. So Arjuna, he wanted to know how to recognize asthita prajna, one in divine consciousness. So therefore he asked, what is his symptoms? How does he speak? How does he sit? How does he walk? Srila Vishnava Chakravarti Thakur explains that Arjuna's first question asks, how is one who is transcendentally situated, sthita prajna, described? What are his characteristics? So Krishna answers that in the text number 55. So it says here, the Supreme Personality of God has said, O Partha, when a man gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification, which arise from mental concoction, and when his mind, being purified, finds satisfaction in self alone, then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness. So then, this is the second question he asked. He says here, how does he speak? This question means, this is what Burijan is describing, that Srila Vishnava Chakravarti Thakur is revealing the inner meanings to his questions. And he says, how does he speak? This question means, how are his intelligence and words affected by another's affection, anger, or neutrality? In other words, how does he respond? Because this is interesting. And then he describes here, that one who is not disturbed in mind even amidst the threefold miseries, or elated when there is happiness, and who is free from attachment, fear, and anger, is called a sage of steady mind. In the material world, one who is unaffected by whatever good or evil he may obtain, neither praising it nor despising it, is firmly fixed in perfect knowledge. So this is how he responds. In other words, how does he speak? So whatever happens to him, he responds. You know, he's equal poised, he's equal minded in that way. Even though there's threefold miseries, he accepts them as the mercy of the Lord. So we see Sukadeva Goswami, he's our hero. He's our guru, he's our exemplar. He's actually the guru of the entire world. And anybody who studies the Srimad Bhagavatam, he's their guru. It's described that the Srimad Bhagavatam is like the Paramahamsa Samhita. So it's very powerful. And we see this great, this mad person running around in the forest, you know, wearing nothing but the four directions. And he comes across these great sages like Vasishtha Muni, who instructed Lord Ram. You know, Lord Brahma, who is the most senior personality in the entire universe and the most intelligent person. And Srila Vyasadeva, the literary incarnation. And they all asked Sukadeva Goswami. Not only them, but there was great sages from all over the universe. And he was selected as the most elevated transcendental personality. So they asked him to speak. And as Prabhupada says in the purport, if one is not prepared to hear the words of a sadhu, there's no profit. So can you imagine the profit of hearing from such a personality? It's kind of hard, I don't know. But we're hearing from this Paramahamsa Samhita every day. And surely we're going to make some profit. So speaking of transcendental liberated souls, I'll end with this story about Srila Sukadeva Goswami. He's actually an eternal associate of Radha and Krishna. And he descended with them. He's actually Radha's parrot. And she would personally feed him. And Sukha would narrate the pastimes of Radha Krishna throughout the groves of Vrindavan. But when Radha and Krishna were winding up their pastimes here, they asked Sukadeva to stay in the world and preserve and enunciate the glories of the beautiful pastimes of Vrindavan. And then after they departed, Sukadeva was in such great separation that he went to the abode of Shankar to hear the beautiful pastimes of the 10th canto that he was describing to his wife, Parvati. And what was going on and on and on, so Parvati was falling asleep. And Sukha was so eager to hear that he began to imitate Parvati's voice and say, oh, please go on, please go on. So he would keep going on and on and on. And then finally, Lord Shiva found out and he became very upset and he was going to punish him. Who is this unknown personality, you know, intruding in my private discussion with my wife? So he was going to chase him, you know, punish him. So Sukadeva, he fled. And this is where he entered the mouth of Srila Vyasadeva's wife. And he actually entered into her womb. And that's where he was transformed into this illustrious sage, Srila Sukadeva Goswami. And he was in the womb there, and he's thinking, I'm in this womb, but I'm in the mature world still, so I'd rather just stay here than go out there where everyone is just mad for sense gratification. Nunam pramatta kurute. Just can you imagine packed in a womb? It's just so amazing. Radha Swami was giving a class to these devotees in Russia, and he goes, you think you're in a difficult situation, you're staying in someone's basement and you're all packed in these rooms. Even as brahmacharis, we still always be packed into one room in Denver. And then, but he said, can you imagine Sukadeva Goswami in the womb, so packed? And yet he was satisfied. That was better than associating with these crazy people in the mature world. Sorry. So thank you for your kind attention. Is there any comments, questions? Realizations? Yes, Drew to Karma Prabhu. The mic is coming, hopefully.
This is just a general comment, not just for you, but for all of us who give class. In general, like when we give reference to stories and things like that, we should give the Shastric source. Just like you were relating some stories of Sukadeva. So it would be good to know from you the Shastric source of those stories. It's just a general comment that all of us who are speaking should be careful to give the sources of what we say.
That's true. Where I got this particular story was from Radhana Swami, who was giving a class. But he didn't give the reference either, and I tried to find it, and I didn't have enough time to find where he got that reference. But
yeah.
Sometimes you hear other devotees giving classes, and they do give these stories.
It applies to everybody, whether they're a guru or not, or a sannyasi or not. They should give the source of the stories they tell. And if we don't have the source, we shouldn't repeat generally.
That's true. I agree with you. Yes, Maharaj.
This story that you narrated at the end of Sukha, how he entered the mouth of was it
Srila Vyasadeva's wife?
Vyasadeva's wife.
Yeah.
So I did read that, and in one of the Puranas, I'm not absolutely sure that this is the one, but it definitely is in a Purana. I think it's the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, because I looked up that story just rather recently. So we can at least be sure that it is from Puranic sources. In fact, there are a few of them with that same story in it. It's just that I don't recall the exact name of that Purana. It's just to reassure everyone here that it's not something that was made up by somebody walking along the street and came up with a story. And there's a lot of that in India.
Oh, good.
They make up a story, and they said, where did you get this from? Well, my grandfather told me. Well, what did your grandfather talk about? Well, his grandfather told. But we end up not knowing who the original grandfather is, whether he had any spiritual status whatsoever.
Yeah.
So, therefore, we have to be careful, as Judah Karma was mentioning.
That's true. And like the story, they had this custom, remember? And they said, where did you get this custom from? Oh, my grandfather, they used to do that custom. But then they found out it was just some kind of mundane thing that someone did for their goat or something. And then it turned into a whole custom people were following for generations. It's crazy. Yeah. Was there any other? Thank you, Maharaj.
Yeah.
Any other comments, realizations? Okay, thank you. Hare Krishna. Agoyastra Srimad Bhagavatam. Agoyastra Srila Prabhupada.